What is the world coming to? And Brother David touched on it in his prayer a little bit, is that God knows the beginning from the end, and that's really the key. When we consider things out of the Bible, we need to really ask ourselves, why is the Bible true? How do we know the Bible's true? What does it give us in any kind of evidence that shows us that what it's telling us will actually happen? And that's one of the beauties of Bible prophecy. And tonight we're going to look at the beast of Daniel 7. And you might say, well, that's kind of an odd subject. Well, it is an odd subject, and it takes a little bit of study and inquiry to find out a little bit more about it. But you might ask yourselves, why does God use the symbol of a beast to represent something? And what we're going to find out is the beasts in Daniel 7 represent kingdoms and nations. And you might go, well, how do you know that? I mean, we wouldn't use something like that. And yet today we still use things like animals and other symbols to represent kingdoms, governments, and representatives. And just an example of that is, what do you think of when you see that? Yeah, I see Democrats and Republicans, but I see a donkey and I see an elephant. So even today we use things like animals and other symbols to represent governments and municipalities. So as we look at what the world's coming to, what we want to look at mainly is chapter 7 of Daniel, but there's other things that really influence what we see when we see this particular chapter and the beasts that we're going to look at and what they represent. First of all, to put the time frame in perspective a little bit, if we look at Daniel chapter 2, which we won't turn it up right now, and I just realized that I don't have my little pointer with me. Oh, I think I did. Oh, I got one right here. Thanks. Well, maybe not. Sorry about that. Good. My kids flash these all around the house, so you'd think I'd be able to find one. But Daniel chapter 2. So we get a little bit of the time frame in perspective. We see that Daniel chapter 7, the time that we're going to look at right now, is under the reign of Belshazzar, which was the ruler of Babylon at that time. Now, Daniel, who is the prophet, he's 82 years old during that time, roughly. Now, all these time frames and even the dates that I'm going to give you of these kingdoms may be off 5 or 10 years, depends on which historian you look at and what source you come up with. So we find Daniel is about 80 or 82 years old. But if we go back to Daniel chapter 2, we find Nebuchadnezzar was the reigning king of Babylon at that time, and Daniel was approximately 17 to 20 years old. So we see about a 60-year gap between chapter 2 and chapter 7. Now, the interesting thing about this is Nebuchadnezzar was the grandfather of Belshazzar. There was another ruler in there. His name was Evil-Merodach. And then there was a couple of other people in there as well. But mainly, it's Nebuchadnezzar and then Belshazzar. Now, Daniel chapter 8, which continues the prophecy, but we won't have time to look at chapter 8 and chapter 11 tonight because of time. But in the third year of Belshazzar, we see chapter 8, which is 2 years after chapter 7, so we see Daniel about 84 years old. And then if we were to continue on to Daniel chapter 11, we'd find it's the first year of Darius the Mede, when the Medes and the Persians overtook Babylon and the kingdom. We find Daniel to be about 85. So what we're going to focus on tonight is chapter 7, but we're going to mainly look at chapter 2 and chapter 7, and keep in mind there's about a 60-year time span between those two chapters. So first of all, the key points of the prophecy that we want to consider is, first of all, the beasts themselves, and there's four of them we're going to look at in chapter 7. There is a little horn, and the little horn on top of the fourth beast has eyes and a mouth, which is a really weird thing. But God uses it to show what prophecy will come to pass in the latter times. We find that the little horn of the west is a religious significance. We find that there's a little horn on the goat of Daniel chapter 8, and that little horn of the east represents a civil and a military presence, and we find that the king that does according to his own will is in chapter 11. So we find just a couple of significant things, because you not only have the beast, but you have the horns on the beast, and within those horns you have another one, which is a small horn that has an eye, has a mouth and some eyes. So God wants to lay out for us what these all represent. Well, first of all, let's open to Daniel chapter 2 if you have a Bible. We'll go ahead and take a look at the different beasts. But before we're actually introduced to the beast, God tells us really where they came from and the time frame that we're in. As we mentioned earlier, it says in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 7, In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream. Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. And then in verse 2, it says, Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Lots of symbology happening here. So we find that not only is it a vision of night, but there's four winds of the heaven, and they strove upon the great sea. So we find, if we look at Bible prophecy a little bit, the visions are of night. Now, the nighttime prophetically talks about the darkness of Gentile times. In the scriptures, we find darkness and light, meaning a mental awareness. In other words, if you have light, you have knowledge and awareness of what's going on. If you're in darkness, you don't know. And it's the symbol of course, light and darkness, literally, use more of the mental state. And we have an example of this. If you just come over to John chapter 9, keep your hand here in Daniel. But in John chapter 9, the Lord Jesus Christ helps us understand this principle of light and darkness. And we're talking thousands of years later here. But in John chapter 9, starting at verse 4, Jesus says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So Jesus made it very clear that unless we have this light, this knowledge, then we won't be able to see what God has in store for us. Now, as far as the next part of the verse that talks about the four winds, winds are a symbol of armies used in Scripture. And in particular, these are the four great powers that are struggling for world domination. Come back to Jeremiah chapter 4. And as we turn to Jeremiah chapter 4, keep in mind that Jeremiah was prophesying at this same time when Daniel was. So we find them both in the same situation, in the kingdom, totally different parts of the kingdom of Babylon, but nonetheless, they're both there at the same time. Daniel chapter 4, looking at verse 11, when it describes these four winds or these armies, it said, At that time shall it be said to this people and to Jerusalem, A dry wind of the high places in the wilderness toward the daughter of my people, not a fan, nor to cleanse. In other words, not a wind of comfort or something to cleanse the air. But he says in verse 12, Even a full wind from those places shall come unto me. Now also will I give sentence against them. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled. So it's a description of the armies that will come and overtake them. And this is what's used of these four winds. And the four great powers here that are struggling for world control are these four kingdoms that we're going to see of the beasts of Daniel chapter 7. Now, since then, no other kingdom has really ruled over the then known world of their time. A couple of people have tried. If you remember, Napoleon tried to take over the world and was unsuccessful, no doubt by the divine plan of God. And then also Hitler was another one that tried to take over the world and was unsuccessful, but was also a great tool in the plan and purpose of God. Also, while we're here, just to look at a little bit of prophecy, come back to Isaiah 45, because he talks of a man by the name of Cyrus. Now, Cyrus was involved in after this king of Babylon, the kingdom of Babylon that we're going to talk about today. But when Isaiah writes, it's about 80 years earlier. So here Isaiah is writing about this king Cyrus that would come and what's going to happen, and it's still 80 years away. Wouldn't our life be so easy if we're looking at our retirement and we had somebody come to us and say, gee, Carl, these six stocks are going to quadruple in price in the next 4 months. Well, that'd make things pretty easy for setting up our retirement plan, wouldn't it? And it's the same thing with God and His Word. He tells us what's going to happen, and He told them at that time what was going to happen in the future. Look at Isaiah 45, looking at the first verse. Thus saith the Lord to His anointed, to Cyrus. Now, Cyrus was a king, a pagan king of the world, not one of his followers, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. He says, I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut asunder the bars of iron. And he tells why he's going to do this in verse 4. He says, for Jacob my servant's sake and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. So God says, Cyrus, this King Cyrus that will come 80 years in the future, is going to do these things, and I'm going to manipulate circumstance so that he takes care of what has to be done so that my people are brought to the point that they need to be brought to. Also come to Jeremiah 25, as we're coming back to Daniel. Jeremiah 25, and again, Jeremiah prophesied at the same time, and Jeremiah is talking about something that was to come, is the 70-year captivity. Now, the 70-year captivity was in this time that we're reading in Daniel chapter 7. That's what they were in the middle of. They were captives of the kingdom of Babylon. Jeremiah chapter 25, looking at verse 12. And it shall come to pass, when 70 years are accomplished, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it perpetual desolations. So here he's telling Daniel, look, in the future, I'm going to take care of Babylon. And as we start Daniel chapter 7, that's the kingdom that's ruling, is the kingdom of Babylon. So we have the night vision as we come back to Daniel chapter 7 now. That comes across the sea like the four winds. And the beautiful thing about the Bible, and I try and read the Bible constantly every year, but you know what? Every year I learn something new. Doesn't matter if I've read it 30 or 40 times, something new comes up. And that's the beauty of it. So if we read it carefully, and we look at that verse 2, it says that Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Well, the great sea is a common term used of the Mediterranean Sea, right in the middle of the Middle East, right next to where the kingdom of Babylon, the Medo-Persians, the Greeks, and the Romans all settled. So the great sea is the sea of the Mediterranean. As we look at verse 3, it continues on, and he says, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse, one from another. So they were totally different, diverse, one from another. And what we find is these represent Gentile powers, and they represent kings, or actually kingdoms. If you look at verse 17 of this same chapter, it says, these great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. And then verse 23 says, thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms. So we see even in Daniel's prophecy, he tells us these four beasts represent four kings or four kingdoms, which will be on the earth. Now, we want to compare them to Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 2 through Daniel chapter 4 in a minute. But first of all, we want to look at the nations. Now, what I've got here is we look at the four. We've got Babylon right now. Then we've got Medo-Persians next, Greece, and then Rome. Now, you don't have to do anything special other than look in the history books for this, because this is all recorded as history as to what nation followed the others. Now, if we read this carefully, it says, four great beasts in verse 3 came up from the sea, diverse from another. And as we go through the next few verses, you're going to find that each beast came after the previous one. None of them reigned at the same time. But one beast came up, and then the next one came after that, and the next one came after that, each taking over the previous one. Now, as we look at this, we find, if we just come to, keep your hand here again, come to Revelation 13. Because in the Bible, we got beasts all over the place. God has given us beasts and statues and idols to represent all kinds of different things. But in particular, Revelation chapter 13 talks about two particular beasts. And we're going to see the beasts of our own referred to here. It says in verse 1 of chapter 13, as he sees this vision, and I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon the horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were the feet of a bear, and the mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him power and his seat and great authority. And we're going to look at the beasts in Daniel chapter 7, which happened to be a leopard, a bear, and a lion. Now, we don't have time tonight, but Revelation 17 is a continuation of this. And if you ever want to understand totally what Revelation is talking about, understand Daniel. If we can understand Daniel, then Revelation makes a whole lot more sense when we get to that. So as we look at these four beasts, we find that each one of them is built successful elements of its predecessor. So as we find the Babylonian kingdom, which was the biggest, and they felt that they were totally invincible, nobody could overtake them, but God has another plan, just like Hitler thought that he had the world under his fingertips and he was going to take care of it, and he had his plan all laid out. And God used him to affect the nation of the Jews instead. But we find Babylon, who thinks they're invincible. The Medo-Persians come in and take over Babylon and absorb not only the best of Babylon, but use the best of their own. Then we find the Greek nation comes in and overtakes the Medo-Persians and also incorporates the best of the Medo-Persians and onward. So they each take the elements of the predecessor to its own, so that when we get to the fourth beast, which is Rome, okay, it includes the best of the previous three beasts, or the strongest elements of the previous three beasts. So as we look at these, just in summary, and we'll get into some detail in a few minutes, God willing, but if we look at the four beasts, we see that Babylon really was an absolute monarchy. They only had one king. The other nations had multiple kings at different times. But Babylon was an absolute monarchy. It had a false religious system in the eyes of God. Then you had the Medo-Persian kingdom, which was allied to a northern king, as well as having multiple rulers during its time. And it had an organized military power. In fact, if you look at the Medo-Persian kingdom, you find the Medes were really the military strength of the Medo-Persian kingdom. And then we find the Greek nation. We find that they were heavily into philosophy, which I think we all are aware of, just based on coming through school. And they also were involved in pagan religious thinking and beliefs. And then we come down to Rome, which have all the attributes of the previous kingdom. So it incorporates all this, including the false system and the philosophy and everything else, as well as it represents the leg and feet of Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel chapter 2, which we're going to look at in just a minute. So as we look at this, in order to understand Daniel chapter 7, we need to look at Daniel chapter 2. So if you can flip back just a few pages to Daniel chapter 2, let's take a look at what he says there. And remember, we're talking about 60 years earlier. But with God, what's 60 years? It's nothing. It's a blink of an eye. To us, it's forever. By the way, I'm not 60 yet, so I just wanted to point that out. So in Daniel chapter 2, if you come back to verse 32, when Daniel is talking to Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And in his dream or his vision, which was given to him by God, he sees certain things. And in verse 32, he says, this image which he saw, well, verse 31 for connection, thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. So Nebuchadnezzar has had this vision, and he sees this great statue with all these different metals made up of the different parts of the body. And Daniel interprets that for him, and he says in verse 38, and wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. He says, he's made you ruler over all these things, King Nebuchadnezzar. You have want for nothing. You're the biggest predator of any nation. You have no known enemies, and you're not worried about anybody taking you over. And Daniel says, thou art this head of gold. So we see that the head of gold in this image is Babylon. And he continues in verse 39, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, we have 10 toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. So you've got this statue that's made up of all these things. So he says, Nebuchadnezzar, you, Babylon, is this head of gold. Another kingdom which is inferior, which we're going to find from the history books, is the Medo-Persian. The third kingdom of brass, which will be the Greeks, and the fourth kingdom to be the Romans. And we're going to find that the feet and toes in the bottom of this image, which we'll see on the overhead in just a minute, represent the latter-day nations of today. Now, just for interest, I put the dates up here of when Babylon reigned, which ended in 542 BC, and Medo-Persians picks up there and goes to about 333. The Greeks pick up there and go to about 65 BC. And then the Romans go from 65 BC to 395 AD, definitely the longest run of the militant empire of Rome. So there's two pieces to the Roman kingdom, which we're going to look at in a minute. Now, if we look at this in a little bit more of a visual sense, we find the image, which we just saw. So we have this head of gold, which represents the Babylonian kingdom, right, which is up in this area. This chart is actually, north is actually this way. So it's kind of tilted sideways so we could fit it on the chart. So we've got this head of gold, which incorporates Babylon. And in Daniel chapter 7, we're going to see that he's represented by a lion, or that kingdom is represented by a lion. We've got the arms and the chest of the image that are out of silver. They represent the Medo-Persian kingdom, which is going to be represented in Daniel 7 as a bear. And in also in here, the Greek nation is represented by the torso and the thighs of brass, and that's represented by a leopard that has four heads and four wings. And again, there's no guesswork as to what the four represents when we look at what God tells us. And then we find that the legs of iron represent Rome, and that is a dreadful and terrible beast, as we'll see in a minute. And the feet and toes, part of iron and part of clay, represent latter-day Europe. So this is what we have. And as we go through these beasts and we look at what they represent, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the dreadful and terrible beast, these each apply to the way those kingdoms ruled. We find the lion, king of the jungle, that represented Babylon. Babylon was a great empire. It had no known predator and was never worried about being taken over until God got involved. We find the Medo-Persian Empire, like the bear, strong, but not as agile and not as fierce as the lion. And we find the Greek nation of the leopard, swift, and uses the element of surprise to its predators. And Rome, made of iron, a strong nation. And this just gives us a quick overview of everything. To put it all together, between Daniel 2, we have the head of gold, which is the lion in Daniel 7. We have the Medo-Persians, which is the silver, that is the bear of Daniel 7. The bronze, which is the Greek nation, is the leopard in Daniel 7. And the Roman Empire, which is iron in Daniel chapter 2, is the fourth beast, which we are going to read about in Daniel chapter 7. And then, of course, the 10 toes of the image, which are 10 kingdoms, represent the 10 horns, which we find in Daniel chapter 7, which is part of the fourth beast. So, is everybody totally confused yet about all the details? It's not easy, is it? You have to really stay with it, and you have to draw it out on charts. I'm very simple-minded, so I use a lot of colors and a lot of charts and everything else. So let's go ahead and start looking at these beasts as we come to Daniel chapter 7 now, keeping in mind that they relate to what we just saw in Daniel chapter 2. We find the first beast in verse 4. It says there, verse 3 for connection, that we just read, the four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. So we have described here for us this first beast, which represents a nation. Remember, verse 17 said these are kings or kingdoms. Okay, was a lion that had eagle's wings, the wings were plucked, and then it was made to stand up like a man and given the heart of a man. So we find, first of all, that this lion, just like Daniel chapter 2, represented Babylon, or it actually represented the area of the Chaldeans, which was Babylon and Assyria, both of them. And what we find, the Nineveh was also the capital. Babylon was more made up of merchants and farmers. The land of Assyria was really the organized military power. So just like the Medes and the Persians had more of a militant and a practical side, so did the kingdom of Babylon and Assyria. And while we're looking at this first beast, before we get into the wings, if we could just come to Jeremiah chapter 50, look at the way Jeremiah describes this kingdom of Babylon and Assyria. Jeremiah chapter 50. Looking at verse 17. It says, Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. The first, the king of Assyria, hath devoured him. And last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. So even in Jeremiah's prophecy, he refers to Babylon as a lion that has come to devour Israel. Also, while we're here in Jeremiah, flip back, if you will, to chapter 4, because Jeremiah refers to this again. Jeremiah chapter 4, looking at verse 7, it says, "The lion is come up from his thicket, and the destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. He is gone forth from his place to make thy land desolate, and thy cities shall be laid waste without an inhabitant." So we see even Jeremiah talking about the aspect of Babylon and Assyria are like a lion that will come and will destroy. And also, by the way, this is just a museum piece that, ironically enough, Babylon had as their own symbol, which was a winged lion. So it's interesting how God's prophecy fits so perfectly into history. The wings represent Assyria and Babylon's widespread territory over most of the then-known world. We find that about wings, is it really represents the ability for them to cover a huge expanse. And Babylon, of course, was the biggest. And what we're going to find out from the leopard that had four wings, it's the same thing. They had quite an expanse in their kingdom. The provinces within Babylon revolted against the capital, which was Nineveh, and the unrest caused a breakdown of the empire, thus plucking the wings of its expanse. So they had a revolt within their own nation. So rather than one big nation that was running unified, now these wings of expanse are plucked, and the revolt caused a breakdown within the land of Babylon. Also, with this revolt that happened, the leadership was actually transplanted from Nineveh to Babylon so that it was lifted up. Babylon's rule was more humane than the Assyrians. There's a gentleman, a Dr. John Thomas, that wrote a book on the exposition of Daniel, and in there he says, "The family of Nebuchadnezzar, which with all its faults, was more humane than that which it succeeded." So in other words, the kingdom of Babylon before the revolt under Nebuchadnezzar was actually more humane than the rulers that were in power before that. And so he was given the heart of a man. Daniel chapter 4, verse 32, actually helps us to understand this. If you just flip back a few pages, Daniel chapter 4 talks about this incident of Nebuchadnezzar and what he went through. I mean, he wasn't a man of God. He was a carnal ruler. He was a ruler of this world. He had no concern for the things of God until God got a hold of him. And what he did is he made him for 7 years be like a beast of the field. So he was given the heart of a beast that he might act that way until he was given back the heart of a man. Chapter 4, I want to do verse 32, but maybe back up just a little bit. Verse 28 for connection in chapter 4. "All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" He's pretty full of himself, isn't he? Of course, when you're the ruler of the biggest nation in the world, I guess you can afford to do that back then. In verse 31, while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will." This is something that Nebuchadnezzar had to come to grips with. God was in control, not him. And so many people in the world that we see today that think that they have everything under their own control are foolish. God is in control. He's in control of nations. He's in control of peoples. He's in control of all things. Oh, he lets things do their own play out of circumstances. But God is in control of his own plan and purpose. And because Babylon was such a huge influence, he did this to him, and he made him be like an animal. Now, as we get down to verse 33, it says, "The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws." This is the ruler of the biggest nation in the world that ruled over the world. And he's like an animal. Now, back then, all of his subjects would probably not touch him because they'd probably go on, "Now, is he just playing around with us? Does he want to see which one of us are really sincere to him and loyal to him?" So this happens for 7 years. And then verse 34, "At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honor him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation." Nebuchadnezzar finally came to that understanding, just like we're going to find at the end of the fourth beast, and the horn on that fourth beast talks about this time period of dominion by the God of Israel. So we find that he was like a beast for 7 years until he understood that God was in control and rules in the kingdoms of men. And it was after that point that he was lifted up and made to stand like a man, and he was given a man's heart that he would be normal again. Okay, let's go to the next beast, Daniel chapter 7 again. So we've got the lion, which is the kingdom of Babylon, which was had eagle's wings and was asked to stand up and given a heart of a man. Verse 5, it says, "And behold, another beast, a second, like unto a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh." So we have a bear now. The bear represents the next kingdom in line with our history books, which is the Medo-Persian Empire. And the bear is a symbol of government. We see this with Russia right now. We see the bear used all the time in the news to represent Russia and its power and its strength. We find that the reign of the bear began under a Mede rulership, and in 2 years went to the Persian rulership, which is Cyrus. Remember we read in Isaiah 45 about Cyrus? It was prophesied of what would happen with him. And that's why we find the one side is higher than the other on the bear, because it was under the rulership of the Medes and then became under the rulership of the Persians. So it didn't have an even rulership. One was always ruling and the other was always a subordinate nation or part of the nation. Also, we find the same symbol is used of the ram in Daniel chapter 8. It's also representing the same empire. Now, we're not going to spend a lot of time on chapter 8, but if you can just flip the page over there, let's just take a quick look at the ram that's used there. Daniel chapter 8, looking at verse 3. Well, let's back up to verse 1 just for connection. "In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me." So again, we're 2 years later now. Chapter 7's in his first year. Now we're in his third year. Okay, and he's in Shushan the palace. And then verse 3, "Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last." So it's talking about this ram, but flip down to verse 20. "The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia." So even in Daniel's prophecy, he takes all the guesswork out. And it's confirmed by the history books that we know that the Medo-Persian kingdom followed after the kingdom of Babylon. So we find because of this change in rulership, one side was always ruling and the other one was subordinate. We've looked at the ram, and also we need to look at the fact that there were three sections of the kingdom which were held tightly in his rulership. Thus, the three bones held tightly between the teeth. Just flip back a page to Daniel chapter 6. This is later in Daniel's life. He's probably about 90 years old or so at this point. By the way, Daniel is not totally in chronological order, so don't think Daniel 5 comes before Daniel 7. It's a whole different class, but just a point to take in. Okay, Daniel chapter 6. Looking at, well, let's back up a little bit. I want to look at verse 2 about the three sections, but this is a part where Belshazzar, later on in his reign, thought he would be really arrogant, so he took all the special things from the people of Israel and abused them in his big party that he had. And there was a writing on the wall, and it says in verse 27 of this one piece of writing, he says, "Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting." Verse 28, "Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians." So again, right here, Daniel takes all the guesswork out. Babylon will be given over to the Medes and the Persians. And then in verse 30, "In that night was Belshazzar the king of Chaldeans slain, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 80 years old." So we find right here the Medes take over the kingdom from Babylon. Now, in verse 1 of chapter 6, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom." So here now the Medes have taken over, and he says, okay, I want to set up things. So he says in verse 2, "And over these three presidents, and of whom Daniel was first, and the princes, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage." So he says, of this kingdom that I've just taken over, I'm going to set up three presidents or three parts, each of which these presidents or these lieutenants, I guess you could call it, for the king would rule over. So that we have the three bones held tightly in the teeth where Darius could keep track of his kingdom under these three presidents. Also with the bear, we need to look at the fact that the empire grew to extend from Ethiopia to India with 127 provinces, and that's recorded for us in Esther chapter 1, verse 1. We don't have to look it up, but anytime you'd like, you're welcome to go and look in that, and it talks about the fact that the ruler at that time, whose name was Ahasuerus, over 127 provinces, wanted to show off the greatness of his kingdom. So he had a party for 6 months. Obviously, he didn't have any labor rules or anything like that that we have to deal with today. But it was a huge empire from Ethiopia, which, of course, is down south of Egypt into Africa, all the way out. So you go past, you leave Egypt, you go past Saudi Arabia, you go past Iraq, you go past Iran, and you get to India and encompass that as well. That was the whole then known world. And this is what he ruled over. So we find that he arose and devoured much flesh and took over almost the entire world at that time. Also, the Medes were used to overthrow Babylon, which we already looked at. We won't look at these verses, but you might want to just make a note of Isaiah 13, verses 17 to 19. And in the effort of time, we won't go ahead and turn that up. So we find of the bear, one side is raised up by the rulership. The three sections of it are held tightly under Darius's control, and they were told to arise and devour much flesh, which they did, and conquered many peoples, if you look at the history book. Also, come to verse 6. We're going to look at the third beast. Verse 6 says, "After this, I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard." Now, if we read the Bible carefully, note that it says, "after this." So we see the first two animals, or the first two beasts, have taken place. Verse 6 is, "After this, there was another, like a leopard, which had upon its back, the back of it, four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it." Well, of course, this isn't literal, but we see here the symbol that God wants us to see. So it's got four wings on its back, it's got four heads, and dominion was given unto it. We find this is the land of the Greeks. We find that Greece was considered to be the most cultured of nations. So it has a different significance, a different desire of its nation than Babylon and Medo-Persian. Each one of them had their own diverse way and their own diverse culture. But Greece was no doubt the most cultured of any of them with their philosophy and everything else. It's represented also by the goat in Daniel 8. Flip the page, because just like the ram we looked at for the Medo-Persians, we find in chapter 8 this also represented by the goat for Greece. Verse 5, it says, "And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes." And down in verse 21, it tells us, "The rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king." Now again, chapter 8 is a whole different class all in itself, but we see here that it's referred to, the Greek nation is referred to also in chapter 8. The other thing that's interesting, you look at the way that the Greeks ruled and their military power was, the leopard is more adaptable and has greater range of habits than most beasts of prey. And you'll find leopards dwelling in forests, deserts, swamplands, and mountains. And it has an enormous amount of speed at short spurts, not long duration, but short spurts. And it has the ability to attack with surprise, which is the way the Greek military power used to operate. Amazing how God knew just the animal to pick. Alexander the Great's dominion was over four successors who divided the kingdom. You have four wings. I think I'm losing my juice here in my little thinger. But you had four wings on his back. And David, did you have one of those I could steal from you? Four wings on his back, and Alexander the Great had four successors who divided up his kingdom. So what we find there, thanks very much. Do I just press the button? Oh, perfect. So what we find here as we look at this particular animal and what it represents, the body of the leopard with its four wings indicates the widespread dominion that he had with his four generals. So you have this leopard, this kingdom, which covers a large expanse. Because remember, they keep incorporating the previous kingdom. So it has this large expanse with the wings representing its widespread dominion, but it was under four generals. So it wasn't a supreme rulership like Babylon was. It had four generals or four rulers greater than Babylon or Medo-Persia. Alexander actually died at a young age at an orgy he was having, according to the history books. And his kingdom was divided into four parts, the south, the northwest, northeast, and the west. And what happened is his generals took over and just made it four separate kingdoms. Although they coordinated, there was no one ruler. It was four separate ones. So what we have, if we have four wings on its back to help the expanse of it, we have four heads that after the death of Alexander, you have now four rulers running his kingdom, and dominion was given over it. Okay, and it was told in Daniel chapter 2 that to bear rule over all the earth. That's what it was told of Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2. So we find this told to us of this leopard. Okay, now go to Daniel chapter, or verse 7 of Daniel chapter 7. We've looked at the first three beasts. We have the lion, the bear, and the leopard, each representing a different kingdom. Now we have the kingdom of Rome, which you remember from Nebuchadnezzar's image was the legs of iron, the strength of the image. After this, in verse 7, "I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly." We find that it was strong as iron, as we were told in Daniel chapter 2. The might of the Roman armies. We also find that their conquests included in the east, Macedonia, Pergamum, Syria, and Egypt, and then in the west, Gaul and Britain. So Rome really spread out. It was a huge kingdom when it got all done, but it lasted for an awful long time. So it devoured all these other kingdoms, as we're told from verse 7. The residue of it is referring to the Persian portion of that Roman Empire of the past that they never did have dominion over, so they overtook that as well. So they overtook the residue. So previously we have this as the Roman Empire, and then we overtook the residue. And after I have this up, I realize it's too small for you to read, so I can pretty much show you anything, and you're not going to know the difference, right? But no, they really expanded out, and the residue, they stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. So we find that you couldn't be compared with any previous kingdom or empire. Now look at the description of the beast, though. It says that it's a dreadful and terrible beast. What animal is that? Don't know. And the key to all this is it's a beast that would not be easily recognizable. The other ones were very easy to recognize because we know what a leopard looks like, what a lion and what a bear looks like. Even though they may have several heads or several wings, we still know what to recognize. But this is a dreadful and terrible beast, which was not only diverse, but would not be known by anything. And the 10 horns that are upon this beast, they relate to the image of Daniel chapter 2 with the 10 toes that support the statue or support the image. He says, I considered the horns in verse 8, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. And we look at the history of all this, and we see what the little horn has taken over and what it's done. We won't go through the history of it as a matter of time, but if you can see there, this is just an artist's rendition of the little horn in amongst the 10 horns on this dreadful and terrible beast. And this is just a couple of other artist's renditions of, this is the one we had on the previous slide. This is kind of a cool one here. This is kind of an unusual one, but and then this kind of looks like my grandfather a little bit with other things. So, I mean, dreadful and terrible beast. I mean, everybody has a different vision in their mind of what's dreadful and terrible. But those are just a few of the artist's renditions of what that might look like. We're not going to go through a lot of this history because we don't have time. But if you look at all the different things of the history of the Roman Empire and the different time frame and what they took over, you find that little horn is a significant part of this great and terrible beast amongst the other horns. And what we find is in 549 to 555, there's a man by the name of Justinian, and his sanctions gave the Pope control over municipal and provincial governments all through Italy. So we find the little horn is starting to grow in the time of history. Now again, this Daniel's prophesying all this. This is much later than Daniel. And then we see as we continue on further, again, we won't go through this, but there's a gentleman by the name of Pepin the Short. I don't know what mother would name his child, Pepin the Short, but nonetheless, that was his name. He was the son of Charles with other Germanic support. He was anointed king by the grace of God by Boniface, a great missionary. Now, the key that we want to look at is down here. Pepin provided the Pope with the military backing he had lost from the emperors of Constantinople. So the Pope or the Roman system had lost some of its control over the land. And so what Pepin did is he provided giving some of that back. So we find the little horn now is starting to not just grow, but it's starting to assert itself in history. And as we see the Roman Empire starting to grow around 750, it expands into the Ravenna area, which we see down here, as far as the growth of Roman Empire. And again, some of this is you could spend probably a whole hour class just talking about the history. And then we have the whole area of Italy around the year 1000. Now, as we continue on, he says, and look at verse 3, or I'm sorry, look at verse 8 continuing. In the year 800, Charlemagne, which was Pepin's son, he was crowned by the Pope as the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire and was given the title of Augustus. So now you had the multiple rulers plucked up and replaced with one single ruler. So that's the three horns plucked up by the roots in this verse and replaced by one, as we see in history around the year 800. And there's other things going on in history too, but again, I'm running short on time. I apologize, David. Now, let's go down a little bit further in Daniel chapter 7, because there's a lot of information between this verse 7, 8, and then when we get down to verse 21. He says, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. We find these saints are the sanctified ones amongst the Medes and the Persians. And we won't look up Isaiah 13, but it's a good idea in your own time to look up the first five verses of that chapter, because it talks about the political and the religious opponents to the Roman system over the centuries and how it affected the growth of that area. Also, we look at verse 22, and it says, Until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. This is talking about the true saints, the followers of God, that will come up from amongst the nations and will rule on behalf of God. As we get a little bit further down in verse 23, It says, thus he saith, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. Again, Daniel's prophesying stuff in the future for him. Fortunately for us, it's history, so we can easily confirm all of this as it took place. And the ten horns out of the kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, in verse 24, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. And we find the Roman Empire was divided among the ten nations that rose out of its ruin. So the ten toes of Daniel chapter 7's image represent the ten nations of divided Europe. Now, it's also interesting to note, too, that the fall of political Rome, which was known as the Roman Empire, led to the rise of the Holy Roman Empire, which was the ecclesiastical system, kind of like a church and state thing. So you had the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, but you had the rise of the Holy Roman Empire at the same time. And we find that the Holy Roman Empire started with Charlemagne in about 800 AD, which was the foundation for this by Pepin and Charlemagne giving the papal states to the Pope. And then in Daniel chapter 7, verse 26, as we come closer to the end of this chapter, we find it says there, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it to the end. So the fourth beast will be dealt with in the time of the end. And we find that this indicates an intermediate time. And we don't want to get into verse 25 because it talks about a phrase that is time and times and dividing of times, which means you have to add the single unit of time and add to that double time and then divide that. So it's a complicated thing. Believe me, there's math involved. You don't want to get into it tonight, but it comes up to about 1,260 years, okay? So what you find is that this is talking about that intermediate time between the end of this period that Daniel is prophesying and the end of the complete destruction of this fourth beast system, or the Roman system. So throughout this intermediate time, the Roman religious system has gradually grown in political influence to the point that it is a major world power and will oppose the Lord Jesus Christ when he comes to establish the kingdom of God. And then at the very end, in verse 27, what is the world coming to? The kingdom and its dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. That's what the world's coming to. God is going to establish a kingdom. He's given us this, which is just a small snippet of prophecy that's throughout the Bible to tell us, even though we can look at it as history, prophesies what happened in the future for Daniel and tells us what will happen in the future for us. And afterwards, I'm happy to talk with any questions anybody might have. Thank you.